Hi, this is Lonnie Jordan, founding member of the band War, and I'm a big fan of KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles.
Expansion Zone with Sonia Barrett.
Everybody's talking about consciousness. Everybody wants that eternal kiss. Everyone's saying there's more than this. Everyone wants to follow their own bliss. Talking about one love, one blood, we sing.
On the Expansion Zone, we examine life and our quest to understand who and what we are and of the vastness of human potentials. We explore the making of our world from quantum physics to parapsychology, health, sociology, and philosophy, along with practical living. You are reminded of the possibilities in creating personal change. So for an hour, we'll stimulate and expand the mind. Well, welcome once again to another edition of the Expansion Zone with Sonia Barrett. I am, of course, your host, Sonia Barrett, and thank you for tuning in on this Monday and every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time at 90.7 FM. And of course, the show is also streaming live at kpfk.org. There is lots of things going on around the planet, right now and around the world. And we still at the same time have to figure out what's going to work best for us. As I often say, when the dust settles, because at some point it has to settle enough for people to move back into whatever they consider to be their normal. So I think that's important for people to focus on, is like, what is it that you want to do, and not make it so much about, what the world is providing for you, but what's your story going to be? All right. So I am going to read a short quote. The quote is this: if the sight of the blue skies fills you with joy, if a blade of grass springing up in the fields has power to move you, if the simple things of nature have a message that you understand, rejoice, for your soul is alive. Eleanor Dose. And again, I really just feel that that's an important quote or thought to really keep in mind. It's, you know, what makes us have some joy, as opposed to just focusing on the media and everything that's going on out there. We've got to pull yourself in, and you can be honest with yourself about what it is that you do and what your fears are. We have to be able to really kind of begin to step away from the marketing of fear in that manner. All right, so today's topic is going to be interesting. And I've been wanting to have this discussion for a while with our guest, Dr. Clotia Rapai, who is the author of many books. But I always refer to The Culture Code, as that was my first introduction to him. The Culture Code, an ingenious way to understand why people around the world live and buy as they do. Dr. Rapai is just absolutely brilliant in the way that he assesses things and his expansiveness. And so this is something that he had shared or mentioned in my documentary, The Business of Disease. And so the topic is really, are people's deaths really random? And, most people don't think about that. But I just think that that's something that we really need to look at. We need to look at a whole lot of different things. So we're going to be talking about that today and then some. So just a brief little bit about Dr. Rapai, because I really want to dive into our conversation. Dr. Clotia Rapai is an internationally known expert in Archetype Discoveries and Creativity. His unique approach to marketing combines a psychiatrist's depth of analysis with a businessman's attention to practical concerns. He has written more than 17 books, probably, I don't know, 20 books by now or more books on these topics. Two of those books, well, one I mentioned, but two of those books are Creative Communication, now used as a standard reference for the French advertising industry and the culture code. Dr. Rapai's technique for marketing research has grown out of his work in the areas of psychiatry, psychology, and cultural anthropology. His work is an extension of the work done by many of the great scholars of the 20th century. And his website, archetypediscoveries.com. Of course, the link is going to be on the expansionzone.com. If you don't remember what it is, you can always go there and click on it. And also, he's very easy to locate on Google as well. Well, welcome once again, Dr. Rapai.
It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Yes, great to chat with you. Now, you were in my documentary, The Business of Disease, and what I loved is you threw out a couple of different things that were unique. They weren't long in terms of obviously going into it, but there were two things that stood out, and I heard it from other people as well. And one of the things was you mentioned an experiment or a research that was done, and that I think you were involved in that, maybe for a client, and looking at, you know, do people die, are their deaths random, or is it happening on specific days and dates and so on. And then you also talked a little bit about the Zen approach, and beyond that, many of these monks and ancient practices where people are able to really manage more the body, the technology of the body with mind. So those are two things that stood out. But today, I want to kind of find out more about that research in terms of people and, you know, do they just die on random days? I mean, I've seen that is not the case, that there's definitely some pattern to it.
Yes, absolutely. You see, this is it all started many decades ago when I was lecturing at the Sorbonne in Paris at the university. And one of my students approached me and say, you know, would you be my supervisor for my thesis? Because I want to write about something very, very interesting. I say, okay, what is it? Well, I do believe that nobody dies by random chance or accident. Oh, I said, this is so interesting. So, yeah, and I intend to prove it. Oh, how are you going to do that? Well, I'm going to take just numbers and look at the date that the people die and all the other numbers that are relevant in his life. And by the way, this is very important to understand what means random. Random is a mathematical concept that, you know, you can use the computer and you get numbers by random. So that's the real random. If you compare when people die with the numbers that are relevant for them in their life, nothing happened by random. There's always a connection. So my theory here is that nothing happens in our life by chance, random, or accident. The only problem is that we don't see the connection. Sometimes we don't understand the connection. It doesn't mean there's no connection. You know, the correlation is there, but we don't see it. So when do you fall in love? When you get sick? When you have an accident? When you die? All that has correlation with other elements of your life, you see. Now, then my students say, look at that. There is already everything that is evident. You go to a hospital and you look at the people that are in bad shape that are going to die. When do they die? You see, the grandmother is going to wait till the grandson is going to be born. And then the next day she dies. It's like she was waiting for something to happen, you see. So we know that this is common sense. But what is fascinating here is that in many ways, and I know I'm going to be provocative here, but
please, I count on that.
We choose to die. It's a choice. I mean, conscious or unconscious, but sometimes it is, okay, all right, enough. I mean, I'm going to die. Boom, done. You see, besides suicide, you know, I study suicide in different cultures, and Durkheim, a great French sociologist, was able to prove that the way people kill themselves is influenced by the culture code or what the culture tells you to do. The Japanese, for example, you know, they are harakiri because they think that this is in the center of their body that their self is. When the French, I think, therefore I am. So when they kill themselves, they shoot themselves in the head, not in the tummy. So you see that there is nothing is but chance again. But that is easy to understand. What is more difficult to understand is why at a certain time, I will insist on the fact that I think it's a choice. We give up. You see, we give up. I remember in one of the sessions that I had, a person that a Holocaust survivor had a tattoo on a arm that say, happiness is a choice. Wow. Happiness is a choice when you come from the Holocaust. I mean, this is something that tells you, you know, what it is here that is so strong, you see. And so, I used to work with Bruno Bettelheim. Bruno Bettelheim was also an Holocaust survivor. And he explained that when he was in a camp, each day he was trying to find a way to improve his situation, like, you know, to put his shoes at the right place to save some time in the morning, because if he was late, he would not have anything to eat, you know. So each time you do a little thing to improve the situation, you increase your chance of surviving. Yeah. Now, and he say some people in the camp over there, they give up. They don't even try. You see, they say, this is destiny, nothing I can do about it. And these people will die sooner than the others. You see, that's what he explained in many of these books. This is Bruno Bettelheim, a great guy. And so, you see, I really believe that we are our destiny. And I think you choose to be whoever you want to be. Huh? Of course, there are some situations that are supposed to be not under your control. Okay, all right. But, you know, like for example, the place where you are born. If you're born in the center of Africa, it's not the same as you're born in the Eskimo country, in the ice over there. So, you know, your first experience, okay. I understand that. You know, if you listen to some of the Asian philosopher, they think that we exist before birth. You see, and so, you know, maybe before I was born, I chose what kind of mother I wanted to have, or what kind of father I wanted to have. Why not?
So there's a string of choices, but however, you might not remember, but yeah, it's like you're making choices all along the way.
Yeah. You see, and it's interesting, when I did some work in you know, psychoanalysis and so on, the way you think about when you were born, you see, already is influencing your life. For example, do your parents wanted to have a child? Or was it just an accident? You see, that is a completely different situation. Because if you really feel that, oh, my parents, they really wanted to have a child, they wanted to have me, and so on. So now you are wanted. But if you were an accident, oh, you know, they were so upset, they didn't want me, they tried to get an abortion, it didn't work. I mean, blah, blah, blah. So your identity is already structured, but something that happened before you were born. But what is key here, this is you have the power to change that. Because, you see, we say that you are what you eat. Well, I agree, but I think you are what you think.
More importantly,
if you think all the time that you were not wanted, then you're not wanted, you see. But if you decide, okay, I'm not going to let that pollution to go into my mind, and I'm going to choose you know, and go into another direction. And so you see, that's what is quite interesting in terms of influencing what is going to happen in your life. Yeah, you know, we know that, for example, in a hospital, two groups of people, same socioeconomic, same intellectual level, same, okay, everything was the same between these two groups of people in an hospital. But one group was scientists, and the other group was religious people, religious, okay? Now, these two groups had the same disease and the same treatment. Which group dies first? The scientists. Why? They know too much.
There are a lot of limitations in there.
They know too much. So they, oh my God, and if I have this symptom, it might mean that, and I might have cancer, and this is that. They're so anxious and tortured by their own thinking. Now, the other people, the religious people, they say, well, you know, I'm going to go to heaven anyway, so I'm happy and it's fine, and I'm going to meet my grandmother over there, and everything is fine. And, you know, so you know, they're more relaxed. It's so interesting here, you see. So for me, I think it's a choice. Now, you're going to tell me, yeah, but there is a reality. I mean, the scientists, they know the reality. Well, today, because of COVID, we have a lot of questions about what the scientists know. What do they know? Not much. You see, I think each time you have an expert that come on television to explain COVID, he should start with, I don't know. So that's what the
reality is. That'll be the most truthful statement.
You see, by the way, it's normal for a scientist not to know, you see, because the quest makes you a scientist, not the result. And when you have a theory, you know that sooner or later your theory is going to be overwhelmed by another theory that contradicts your theory and so on. So you keep exploring with uncertainty. Now, I think that a French philosopher says something like, I respect people that are looking for the truth. I'm very worried and concerned about the people that pretend they found it.
Makes sense. But, you know, but I just want to say, based on a lot of what you're saying, I mean, I concur. I mean, I see that clearly. And I also see the influence of a society and what gets marketed and how people take that in. I often say when I watch the commercials, because I watch the commercials with fascination, because I simply recognize the influence programming, maybe where they tell you if you're between these ages, you're between the age of 30 or 40 and 80. And I always think, that's really interesting how they always stop like at 80. And it seems so suggestive, because people are already thinking they're not going to live that long, but they always just sort of stop. It's like life is over. You know, maybe I don't even think they go to 85 in the commercial. They never say if you're between 40 and 90. It always stops right in there. And I think that all of those things for people kind of starts to support their idea of their own longevity.
Yeah. You see, I was, by the way, paid by a group of companies to explore longevity. And one of the key words they wanted to explore is immortality. So I did some work on that. And, you know, and people told me, well, you know, I don't know if I want to be 100, because my friends, are they going to be there? Are they going to be 100 also? So, okay. Then we push a little bit. Do you want to be 150? Oh, 150? Oh, I don't know. Do you want to be 200? Oh, no. I don't want to be 200. I don't want. So there is an unconscious level that we okay. You see, so right now, a lot of people are 100. We have a largest group of people that are 100-year-old. In the world that we never had before, you see, and they're going further, 110, 120. I mean, so we can have a life expectation. I mean, if you are 80-year-old today, you might have 20 years more life in front of you, or maybe 30, you see. Now, I think that if you believe that life stop when you are 95, then you're going to be dead at 95. You see, the program is so interesting. You see, there are three curves. One curve is your body, your biology. And we know that because of the diets and the hygiene, we have anything. Your body is not as old as your age on your passport. So if your body is 80, actually you have a 60-year-old body. You know, there is usually your body is in better shape. Okay, so when you are 80, your real body is 60. Okay, so you have your body age, 60, your passport age, 80, and there's your psychological age, you see? And you see, I mean, for example, some women in their 60 or 65 start telling me, you know, the other day I realized I was invisible. I say, what do you mean invisible? Well, nobody look at me. You see, nobody look at me, and I'm invisible. So suddenly, if you decide that, because it's a decision, it's a choice. You see, if you decide to be invisible, then you become invisible, and you don't pay attention to yourself. You don't take care of yourself. So, I've done work in a nursing home, and you know the for a makeup company, right? It's absolutely amazing to see that these ladies, they are sometime 80, 85, 89, something like that. When there is a new guy arriving, I mean, he might be 85 or 90, but immediately they go to their room, they put makeup and lipstick and, you know, and when I spoke with them, I say, the day I stop putting makeup, I will be dead. So you see, so it's beautiful. I love it. By the way, I don't know if you want me to be provocative here or not, but these old people, they have sex all the time, and you know, and the guys don't want to use condoms, and they say, "Hey, I'm going to die anyway, so why bother?" There is a resurgence of sexually transmitted disease. Mm-hmm. Or people over 80 in nursing homes. So this is serious, you know, this is serious. But anyway, it's like taking a risk, you know, it's like you're young because you're taking the risk, yeah, you know, something like that. So it's so interesting for me to see that in one way, we transmit that to our children. You see, I think, of course, there is a culture that tells you what is going on, but your parents, you see, and unconsciously, they program you in a certain way. You see, and so this is, again, something that we can be aware of and try to change. If I tell to my son, you will never be a doctor because you're too dumb. Wow. So maybe the good thing is I'm going to say, you are the one that is dumb, and I'm going to become a doctor just to show you how good I am. So that could be a strategy that works, but most of the time
it doesn't work
this way, and the children say, well, you know, okay, I will never do it, I will never do that, I will never, you know. I can tell you, I'm an American today, and I love this country. We're not perfect, of course, there's so many things that we can improve, but compared with the French, and I have two boys, one that is French and one that is American. In the French culture, the old school system is to tell you, you're dumb. You will never make it. No, not even try. Forget about trying to do it. I mean, this is terrible, 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 terrible. You see, when in America, you know, well, sometimes we get a second chance. Sometimes we get, you know, positive attitude. Sometimes, you know, you can make it. Sometimes you will. And I really believe, comparing the two cultures, that a child born in America today have more chance to succeed in his life, whatever it means to be happy, than a child in the French culture.
Interesting.
You see, so I think that and the commercial play a key role here. You see, for the movies, for example, are very interesting. What is the character that you can identify with? What is he going to do? You know, is he going to be successful or not? So, you know, I remember people in when I was younger that I really admired, from John Wayne to Sidney Poitier, you know. And so all these people could make it. You see, I mean, for me, Sidney Poitier was a big hero. He was, first of all, intelligent, handsome, but all that, you know. I remember there is this notion that today you can do it. It's not easy. It's not easy. It's never been easy. But things are changing. You see, for example, for me, I was born during the war, and the Germans were the enemies. My grandmother has been invaded 3 times in a lifetime by the German, you see, 1817, 1914, 1939. I mean, come on. And so I think the French try very hard to integrate the German into an economic system to make sure that they don't invade. I mean, the German might love Paris. They occupied Paris 3 times.
That's love.
But you see, but the notion that there are things that you cannot control, I don't think is not true. I think one person can make a difference. And if one person starts making a difference, everybody can make a difference. You see, this is what, so if we go back to do we die by random chance or accident? You know, I usually say I have too many books I want to write. I cannot die right now. I'm not finished.
You're too busy.
I'm too busy. Absolutely. You see, and I'm passionate about the book I want to write, and this is so exciting for me. And I want, you know, so I'm writing a book right now called Reptilian Rhapsody. Mm-hmm. Reptilian Rhapsody, and it is like the reptilian part of your brain, the reptilian part of your body. Is always fighting to survive and want to survive and want to succeed. But it's a rhapsody, which is not a symphony. There is not an order. It's kind of messy. And so anyway, I cannot die before I finish this book. It's not possible. And I have others that I want to.
So you're going to be around for quite a while.
Absolutely. See,
absolutely. That's choice.
With me or wrong. But you see, I think that the way you look at yourself, it's always a prediction of, you know, people tell me I have no life. Okay, what do you mean I have no life? Well, you know, I lost my job and, you know, I have this kind of disease and I have that and my family, my wife or my husband divorced me. Okay, I don't understand. This is terrible. Huh? But what kind of life do you want to have? Well, you know, I don't think I have any choice. Yes, you have a choice. Of course, this is you.
Yeah, you see? That word choice becomes really big. I'd like for us to stop and take our quick break, and then we'll come back and pick that up, because there's so much that we could talk about in terms of this subject matter of choice, which is really at the heart of much of this. Yeah. So stay tuned, everybody, and we'll be right back after this brief break.
You never want to be told the truth. The lies continue. The people suffer. What are we to do? The time is now. We will wait no longer. We decide right now. It's over. We have the power.
This is Donna Walker, host of Pacifica Performance Showcase here on KPFK. I'd like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in, and especially thank those of you who pledged your support or renewed your membership to KPFK during this past fund drive. The support of generous listeners like you is what allows this listener-sponsored station to operate and to maintain its fierce independence. It's a very special relationship, so thank you once again for being a part of it.
And And we are back. Of course, we're coming to you from KPFK 90.7 FM in Southern California and streaming live at kpfk.org. You are listening to The Expansion Zone with Sonia Barrett. Of course, that's me, your host, and I'm chatting with my guest today, Dr. Clotia Rapai, and we are discussing a subject matter that you probably don't really hear much of, but the idea of do people die randomly? Does anything happen randomly? Are there select dates, where people die by those dates for whatever reason? And, Dr. Rapai, two things do come to mind. I want to say, I remember my aunt, who was like a mom to me, she passed on Mother's Day, and it was shortly after we had this big dinner. But you could feel something with her. And then after that was over and everybody had gathered, she went home, and then I get a call and she passed. Now, to me, I could, for whatever reason, I could feel that, like you will always remember, on Mother's Day. And then her daughter, my cousin, passed last year. And I remember when the hospital called and said, she's, on her way out. I'm here in California and she was in Florida. And my birthday was going to be, it's April Fool's. Yes, I was born on April 1st. And this was approaching that day. And I said to her, in my mind, I said, whatever you do, please do not die on my birthday. Do not do that. And I know her so, because she liked being around me and close to me. She was almost 20 years older than me, but I knew that. And I said that to her. So what did she do? I kind of heard her go, okay. So she dies like 5 hours before midnight. And so it's little things, like that, that I've seen. And you do have to own that there we are making choices without realizing that we Absolutely. Are making choices.
Absolutely. You see, I usually say something that I really like is that you have to succeed not to succeed. Okay. Succeed not to succeed, which means that, okay, if you succeed, done, finish, I'm done. So I can leave, I can die, But if you never succeed to succeed, which means that you never finish, is always uncompleted, you see? And you still need to work hard to complete it.
So more living needs to be done then.
Absolutely. You see, so that's why I'm always writing a new book.
Because you can never be done.
I will never be done. Yeah. But on the other hand, it's always like, for some people, for example, that they have their children and their children are grown and they're gone and, they say, okay, done. I've done, accomplished my mission here. No, it's never done. It's never finished. They are the
so
grandchildren. They are the grandchildren and they are the children around the world that need you. I mean, there are so many children in need of parenting that we never done. You see, yeah. But the problem is when somebody, because you're tired, because you had a lot of difficulties in your life, at a certain time, you choose to give up. And that is the key moment here. You see, when I work with people explaining how they can transform their life in some ways, I always ask them, what is the trigger? What did happen the day you decide to give up? What is it, the little thing, you see? And it could be a little thing. Like examples, some ladies will tell me, I look in the mirror and I didn't know who this person was. That is me? No, it cannot be me.
Like, whose body is that?
Whose body is that, you see? And so that's a trigger. But today, you can transform yourself in so many ways, not only plastic surgery, but, and the way you feel is so important. It shows, when you are happy and you smile and you radiate, there is this dimension that comes from inside. And the Beauty, as you know, is very relative, so it depends from one culture to another. But that it's from inside outside, which means that what do you feel about yourself? Like generosity, I think that when people start to be generous, they are on the way to die. You see, generosity is absolutely key. You want to give. If you don't want to give, then you're done. You're dead. But to give, you need something to give. And what is it? A love, attention, a care, emotion. I mean, there are many things that you... But if you don't have that inside, then you're dry. And dry is, you know, there is nothing to share, you see. So this is one thing I want to share with you, that one of the part of my book, the future book, Reptilian Rhapsody, is animals. Animals. You see, there is more people in America that live with an animal than with another human being. That's the statistic. There are more people alone living with a dog, sometimes a cat, but usually a dog, than living with, why? Because widows, they live longer, they're alone. But if you think about the dog, it's amazing how reptilian is a dog. You can touch the dog, you caress the dog, the dog comes to sleep with you in your bed. But then you have to feed the dog, to make sure it's clean when you are in the street. I mean, there is all this reptilian dimension there, you see. And so there is a connection established at a very simple level that we have with our children. When children are little, we have this connection with them, you see. And again, it's a difficult task to be a parent, because if your goal is for children to be independent, so one day they're going to leave and ask you money.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. You know, passion and purpose, you know, and those are some of the things that, you know, I've shared with my two daughter-in-laws over the years, is that it's, you know, it's great when you're raising the children. It is absolutely wonderful. You're in it. You're invested. There's a lot going on. But someday they will leave. So my thing is, looking at your passions now. Start, you know, have your passion happening. If you like art, if whatever it is, have that going on at the same time, which is what I did as I'm raising, you're raising the children, so that it's not suddenly they're gone and you're going, what do I do now? And I met somebody like that. This woman said she actually had to go into therapy when the last child left, because her whole life was just completely invested in raising the children. It's like she had no sense of who she was.
Yeah. You, this is a key element here, because, you know, I wrote one of my books a long time ago called Understanding One's Parents. So it's a book that was written for children that want to help their parents to grow, not the other way, you see. And I told them, you see, children don't need parents. I know people are going to hate me when I say that. But children don't need parents. Parents need children. That's why they have children. But because they are in need of children, they have to pay the price, which is sacrifice and everything. The ideal relationship with a child, if you are a man or if you are a woman, you want to show your child that it's possible to be a man and happy, or to be a woman and happy, to be a mother and happy. And so that the connection you give them. You know, but if you are always crying and disappointed and suffering because you sacrifice your life for the child, what are you teaching? That life is sacrifice and you're not should not be happy. See, this is... So that's why... I published an article in the magazine, French magazine called Elle, the famous French magazine. And they interviewed me on this book. And I told them, you see, to be a mother is a temporary job. Temporary job. But it's not your identity. It's not your destiny. Of course, this is important, and you. But don't think of that your identity for the rest of your life. You see, this is a temporary job. By the way, there is a very famous a little boy called Poil de Carotte. Poil de Carotte means hair, red hair, like a carrot, the hair. He had a red hair. And he say that not everybody is lucky enough to be born an orphan. Whoa. What does it mean? It means that, you know, the parents, they want you to do what they were not able to do before. You see, and so, hey, let me live my life. If I want to be that, I mean, no, you have to do this. I mean, they fix their own problem there. So the ideal parents, you know, Bruno Bettelheim, again, who was my master, told me that he was very happy because when he was a little boy, he didn't see much of his parents. And he said, well, I had a nanny, and she was very nice. Why? First, she was drunk every day, so she was very happy. And after drinking too much, she fell asleep, and she will not bother me.
That is so funny.
You know, it's. I mean, one of the problems we have is that we think that there is a proper order of things. And not really. It depends how you react to what is happening over here, you see. And so your reaction is your choice. I mean, if I choose never to be sad, I can manage never to be sad, you see. But it's a choice. Oh, but they tell me it's not possible. Of course you're going to be sad. No, if I can program myself to say, okay, well, you know. I remember one of my boy was a little boy. I always tell him that there is no problem in life. There is only challenges to stimulate your creativity. Okay? And so one day we were going back to the car together after going to the movies, and I said, oh my God, I don't know what I've done with the keys. So I was very upset. He said, Dad, it's an opportunity to use your creativity. Happy, yes, great, a problem.
Sometimes at those moments, though, when children do that, you're going, okay, but not in this situation, not right now. But yeah, no, it that is so true. There's so many things here, I think, that are just great takeaways, because these are some things that I've been expressing, is that you don't own children. And sometimes parents do feel like they, you know, the kids are property, and it's like we're caretakers, and you're still you. We're just these big kids. That's how I see it. We're all just these really overgrown kids. And so when we work with it, when we deal with our children, I think it's to be able to recognize that we are still growing, expanding, and we have our own personal passions and goals. And I think it's important that our children see that. I felt that it was very important.
Yeah. Yeah, you see, the big issue that we see in America, for me, is that parents want to overprotect their children. Okay, so you don't learn anything when everybody is taking care for you, you see. One of my son, when he finished college, I told him, okay, you are on your own now for 2 years. I don't want to give you any money. You know, find a way to survive. He said, what? He said, yeah, no more money for 2 years, you are on your own. But if you succeed for 2 years to be on your own, then I can pay you for go to a business school, right? But first, you have to learn how to survive by yourself. That's it. And he hated me. Mm-hmm. Of course, he said, come on, you do that to me. Why did you? You hate me? I said, no. It's because I love you. So, oh, come on, don't tell me that. Okay. Then for Christmas, he called me and he said, Dad, I have to wash the neighbor's swimming pool to be able to get some cash to go to McDo to buy. I say, good. You're learning.
You're being innovative.
But then 2 years later, when I say, okay, you did it, he say, yeah, I'm happy. I not even want to go to business school. Now I'm into business. I've started that. So it was completely transformed, you see. I remember that reading about some tribes in Africa, when a young boy is at a certain age, they paint his body in white and they throw him alone in the forest. And he has to come, he can only come back when the white is gone.
Mm.
So he has to survive with all the animals and everything and say, wow, you see. But then when you come back, now you are a man and you don't have to prove that you are a man anymore. You see, this is accepted. Look at when do you become a man in America? It's very difficult. You see, very difficult. So there's always this need to prove something that. So anyway, if we go back to the notion of choice, I think that we make a lot of choices unconsciously in our life. And my recommendation, my advice is to try to be aware of the choices you make, because they might determine the rest of your life. So it's better to make to be aware of that, you see, not just let the flow take you in a direction. It's a choice. I really believe that happiness is a choice. Happiness is a choice, you see. Even if you are, for example, French philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre say that only when we are in jail, in prison, are we really free. So what does it mean? It means that when you are wandering outside, going to work, you don't know you're free. You don't realize that you're free. But when you are in jail and freedom has been taken away from you, now freedom becomes so important that you've never been more free to think about freedom than at that time. You see, so there is a way to look at the reality of a situation. But what can you learn from this situation? What is this situation enriching you, making you better, richer? You know, and there is always that situation there.
An opportunity. So yeah, I understand that. I understand completely, because everything sort of becomes relative according to what the conditions are. For example, the idea of freedom, how our perception changes quickly when this thing is taken from you. But while you're living free, then we always have a complaint about something else, you know, right. And it just goes on. But we also tend to commit to these ideas. We commit to these limiting ideas, which is, is what we see. We commit to maybe something our parents, however we were raised, whatever our parents said, maybe society. Nobody really lives past 85. If that was what was said, if that's what's said, then we have people that commit to that idea. Well, I'm going to die anyway. It's just certain things you hear that people are saying, and you hear that they're shaping, they're creating some sort of personal law for themselves without realizing that that's what they're committing to.
Yeah. You see, if I'm committed to my life, I cannot die. I mean, again, if I didn't finish my book, I cannot die. There is something that is transcend me, that is more than me. But if I'm just looking at myself, getting older, shrinking, getting smaller, having some stomach, I mean, come on. And then, I'd rather quit.
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. With no chance, because there's a sense of no chance of anything changing. Same thing with the research that you did with people saying, oh, no, not 150. And again, it comes down to the perception of what that could look like. Naturally, right. In our society, we see 100 years old. Oh, man, you're falling apart. You're in a chair. all those things are happening. But I hope to someday release that video when I did the film and I interviewed Benando LaPaolo, who, when I interviewed him, he was 111, and he lived to, I think, 114, 115. He was in Arizona. And this man, you can still see some of his videos online. He was like 100 at the time, 108 or something. And he was doing cooking videos. Now, the one thing he said to me, the only thing that you should focus on is living. That's what he said. That's all you should focus on is living. And he was working on his other book, his second book. He walked a little under 2 miles a day. He was doing workshops and talks. I mean, he was busy. So when he finally passed, he just, it was in his sleep. He just slept away. And his daughter said he did everything the same way. And then this one morning he didn't wake up. So he wasn't sick or anything. So that was really interesting to interview this gentleman that was really high functioning.
Yeah. You see, I love that. I love this quote because concentrate on living. Concentrate on living. You know, you're alive. Live your life. Enjoy your life. You see? Enjoy food, enjoy your drink, enjoy meeting people, enjoy making love to the people you love. I mean, this is all this dimension there. That's a life, you see.
Yeah.
For example, to walk in the park is great, to walk in the forest, to watch the sea. There's so many beautiful things. And you know, listen to music. I love to listen to music all the time. You see? So that's being alive. And it's a choice. Nobody can stop you to listen to music. Nobody stops you to go and walk in the park. You know, it's not in question of money or social status or whatever. This is a permanent attitude that you enjoy life. You see, this is, and I mean, I love life. No question. You see, this is a, and if I can share that with some other people and make other people enjoying that, that's it really, you know, this is a,
It is. It's fantastic. It's just lots of passion. But before we go, is there anything that you want to give us, share with the audience in terms of maybe contact information, books, whatever else that you may do that I am not aware of? Would you like to share that?
You see, I think there is a quote that I really like, is that happiness is one of the few things that you can give, even if you don't have it.
Don't cost anything.
So it means that you can always help people to become happy. But that gives you a mission in life. And, you know, in return, you're going to be happier than you were before. You see, for me, the big secret is generosity, is to give, to learn how to give. You see, you know, there is a commercial about dog food that I really like, and because I have my little dog, and you know, and the commercial say, "Love them back, love them back." Well, it's true. I mean, my dog loves me. Of course, he has good interest to love me because I feed the dog, and I. but everybody is interested. But I know it's clear. You know, there is no ambiguity. He doesn't have an agenda. He doesn't have a political agenda to try to convince me of something. And so that's the relationship I like to have with people, which means that, how can I make you happy? You see, and making you happy makes me happy too.
Yes, that's, to me, that's really a powerful part of it, because we're so busy not wanting to be selfish, which is what I always say. We don't want to be selfish, but at the same time, yes, we are giving and we are receiving. And it's okay to just own the fact that when I do something for this person, I feel really good. And I think sometimes people feel like they can't say that, but it's the truth. I mean, you do feel good when you do for someone else, especially if you have no agendas or if you have no expectations. You just do, only in the moment as you feel it, not out of just obligation or I want to do this because it looks good.
You see, one thing I like to add, if I may, is like we have to take risks in life. You see, if we don't take risks, we're dead again, you see.
And being here on the planet is just risky.
Life is risky, you know. And I like this. I think it's a Native Indian American story that I really like. That when they die, they go to heaven, and there is the Grand Manitou over there that is at the door, and say, okay, are they going to let them go into heaven or not? And the Manitou say, show me your scars. Oh, you don't have any scars? Go back down and have a life.
Go and live.
But if you have many scars, then you welcome to heaven. And I love that very much. You see, I value people that took risks in their life and that have many scars. And I respect.
I should get in freely then. Yeah, I love that. I've loved this conversation because, again, this is so important. We don't really hear much of these kinds of conversations because, in a way, it's some people just don't think about that. It's just a given that that's the way it is. Yet the mind is so incredibly powerful. And I think the whole technology of the body and the whole idea of being human is just, to me, just a fascinating experience. And that alone fills me with passion because it's endless. You're in this endless discovery. It's just, as you said, just this endless questioning and, you know, experiencing. So I thank you so much for coming and sharing with me today, Dr. Rapai. And I'm looking forward to that new book when that time comes. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you. It was a great pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Well, to my listening audience, here we are. We are at the end of the show. Thanks to, again, Dr. Rapai, and thanks to our engineer. And, of course, do visit theexpansionzone.com for the replay of this show and all the other shows. And remember, not to take life so seriously, really kind of taking what was said here today. Do visit my YouTube channel as well. And to find out more about me, visit therealsoniabarrett.com. And as always, I do like to remind you to live life to its fullest and question everything. Until next time, see you then.
Everybody's talking about consciousness. Everybody wants that eternal kiss. Everyone's saying there's more than this. Everyone wants to follow their own bliss. Talking about one love, one blood, one light in everyone. One light, give each other.
The radio program Making Contact is now produced by KPFK and Pacifica Radio, and we're looking for volunteers to join our team. The station needs people who want to help book guests, conduct interviews, or script the show, especially bilingual English-Spanish speakers, people who have experience with audio editing, and someone who's skilled at enhancing interviews with archival footage, music, and sound effects. If you'd like to join this exciting transition and be a part of Making Contact's future, please email makingcontact@kpfk.org. That's makingcontact@kpfk.org.
Support comes from the Festival of Tabla, returning for 2 days of Indian classical music and dance on Saturday, August 22nd, and Sunday, August 23rd, at the Soka University Performing Arts Center in Aliso Viejo. Global Virtuosos will present immersive